With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Carl from Milton Keynes, and you're listening to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything. My question is, when it comes to music and the arts, do they really not make them like they used to anymore? Or does nostalgia cloud our judgment? Okay, people, here comes the show. And remember, question everything. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dame Baptiste Questions Everything, a podcast where myself, comedian, writer, and occasional actor Dame Baptiste, my producer friend Howard Cohen, a.k.a. The Hizzer.
Hello.
And a mix of very special guests pose the questions that need to be asked. And we are talking everything from...
Everything from Carl, from Milton Keynes' question, do they not make music like they used to? Or does nostalgia cloud our judgment? What a question. Dane, what do you reckon?
I think most people still make music in the same way. I think music industry probably... has stayed very, very much the same in terms of music is made or structured in order to realize, you know, commercial gain as opposed to, like, you know, being art itself. The main part of it's nostalgia so far as the sound of it, but I feel like
that's it, isn't it? Like, that Motown stuff will always sound that different thing, right?
It'll sound different, but then era. But then, you know, that we need that in order for us to, some of the music that we listen to today is sampled from that era as well, and you know. We will romanticize that kind of era where it was like those are the days, but you know, a lot of those performers from them days had the same social ills that they were dealing with, some of the worst social injustices of the time, and also, you know, a lot of drugs, a lot of guns and stuff. Like Marvin Gaye was shot, like, you know, Frankie Lyman died of a heroin overdose. So I feel like the music and the music industry hasn't changed. I think artists are the same, but yeah, I think we'll always have that yearning for nostalgia because normally music is used to underscore a particular point in our life. So yeah, there's no question too stupid, no question too serious, no question too silly. So if you like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or follow us on Spotify, and you will never miss an episode. Or you can subscribe to us on Acast, the world's largest podcast network, where you get to hear all the questions being answered from all of our very special guests. And with that being said, on today's show is a comedian, documentarian and a writer. In his first 2 years in comedy, he won the Comedy Cafe New Act of the Year competition and Chortle Student Comedy Award. You may have seen him on TV shows such as The John Bishop Show, Live at the Apollo and 8 out of 10 Cats. He became one of the faces for the Viceland TV channel with his own series Hate Thy Neighbour, and he recently hosted Comedy Central's Live at the Edinburgh Festival series, and is an avid comic fan and is potentially going to become an honorary member of the Wu-Tang Clan. Please welcome to the show the one and only Jamali Maddox.
Yo, what's up, man?
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, brother. You know, I forgot about the Comedy Caf Award.
Yeah.
It's weird people still bring that up because that's just like a win on the night.
There you go. It happened. You went in there. Yeah, Benny Vinicius, all
the
ones there. That's how it's
done. That's it. You won the Laughing Pig Award and shit like that. Do you know what? Like, quick story. Yeah. Like, one time, talking about the Wu-Tang Clan, I interviewed them for a podcast and it was so bad we couldn't release it. It was so, like, they were so difficult.
Because
it was like being paid for, and the film crew were just like, and the producers, they're going to push me to push this out. And then even the producer was like, yeah, nah, like, that was embarrassing. We spent bare money on it, but fuck it, don't worry.
Jamali, we were talking to Ghostface about him coming on the show. I was emailing him directly, it looked like. And, I mean, the amount of money he asked for, crazy. It's like, I don't know what you think this is, mate, but,
yeah,
you know.
Good luck. If you get Ghostface, good luck getting any tangible conversation from him, man.
Yeah, I feel like he's not really into it, man. I remember, was it the whole crew when you was there?
Basically, long story short is, so it was meant to be everyone. It went down from everyone for an hour and a half to three members for 10 minutes. And it was just like, so I got left with RZA, Master Killer and Ghostface. And okay. to be honest with you, Master Killer was the coolest one out of them all. Yeah. But he's the one you least want to talk to.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the hardest thing. That's the hardest thing. He's exactly great guy, person who we're least interested in. And then the RZA, who is overly hardcore Wu-Tang, and Ghostface, who's pretty temperamental. So it's like, if he's not in the mood, I saw him he must be a Nardwa once.
Oh, yeah. He had a toothache. So he had a toothache. He took it out on me and my podcast. RZA was the worst. RZA started started talking about God. And then told me like this long joke that was like really misogynistic. So there's a chick and she's sucking my dick. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, cool. Okay, bro.
All right, fam. I was actually thinking about, I think if we could have any of them on, I do think Meth is an interesting man, right? Like, no doubt. And I forgot basically that he's been an actor, isn't he, for quite a long time.
He had a sitcom with Redman. They had a sitcom.
Yes, I remember. It was.
And apparently, he talked about getting fucked up by the producers and that. But I think Method Man looks like the most professional.
Yeah, I just noticed because I've been rewatching the HBO series Oz.
He was in Oz, isn't it?
And he was in The Wire.
I think he's in a few of them, maybe
one of the Marvel films. I'm pretty sure he's in one of them.
He was in that show with Black Thought's a pimp as well. It's supposed to be really good. I haven't seen it. It was like an HBO show.
Yeah,
I remember he played Cheese in The Wire and he got shot by Brother Mazumbo.
That's right.
He got shot by
Slim Charles.
Oh, I thought he got shot by the Nation of Islam guy.
Because Brother Muzone, he left after they killed Stringer. And then happened is, I think after Marlo leaves, then the co-op gets back together. And then they shoot Slim Charles because Method Man gave up Prop Joe.
Yes.
Yeah. Spoilers, by the way, for anyone who's watched the
But you deserve it if you're not seeing the wire. You know what's so funny about the Method Man thing as well? Because I was watching an interview with him yesterday. He was talking to Fat Joe and he was saying that, you know, obviously because there was a lot of the loyalty was a big issue with the Wu-Tang. So a lot of the time you'd have to sneak off and do individual projects. So that's how he ended up doing Method Man and Red Man and doing that tour. And then obviously how that kind of spawned. And also, because he's the only person that features on Ready to Die, sorry.
Yeah,
Biggie's first album. And at the time, Ray and Ghost had beef with Biggie as well. Shark Biters on the Purple Tape.
Blackout album's one of the great of all time, though.
That's a great album.
Really good. I mean, it's sort of like you'd be surprised that two guys who aren't from the same crew and sort of came together with they're probably one of the best duos in hip-hop.
Absolutely. It's so cool because they started off like a nice little thing of, well, I guess they started off because I feel, did Talib and Mos Def do Black Star before them?
Yeah.
Did they?
I'm not sure if I remember. But it was just before, yeah. But I mean, I wish that would happen so much more in hip hop. I mean, it's starting to happen again. I think obviously Drake did the mixtape with Future. But there should be so much more of that.
But are you forgetting about Lil Wayne and Jules Santana's mixtape?
Oh, yeah, true. true.
I Can't Feel My Face mixtape. I had to buy that from Dark and Cold in Central London. Or the little goons that used to bully you into buying fucking DVDs.
Oh man, those guys are the worst. If you're still a rap goon and you're still selling mixtapes on the street, you know what? Like, I mean, are you surprised? Because at this particular point now, you should be able to literally just walk around with like a barcode and then send people to your SoundCloud. But I can't tell you to get your money. Some people maybe just like the old, maybe they just like the hustle. Who knows?
It's probably time for a question, isn't it, Dane, as the format of this show dictates?
Absolutely. So Jamali is our very esteemed guest. We want to thank you for coming on the podcast. And as you know, the format goes that we will invite our guests to ask a question, any question they would like, which we discuss for 15 minutes and some change. Then Harold will ask a question and we will do the same. And then lather, rinse, repeat. I will ask a question, which we'll discuss same amount of time. Then we'd like you to let our listeners know where they can find you now that they know more about you. Sound like a plan?
Sounds good to me. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's fucking nice, quick and concise.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Wham, bam, Wu-Tang Clan, thank you, ma'am.
There we go.
So, please ask the first question when you are ready.
So basically, I was trying to, because I listened to podcasts, big fan of the podcast, and I wanted to find an important and pertinent question. And the question I want to ask is, in these mad times, it seems like it's going to be the end of the world. And I want to know, if the world ends, what's your survival plan?
Dane's probably got this written out, I imagine, already. Yeah,
because I've been like, cause during when lockdown happened, it kind of, and I went on the YouTube hole and I guess my anxiety kind of kicked in. I did start thinking, oh, fuck, like, I should actually, so can I swear?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Swear your heart out.
I was like, the end of the fucking world, Jamali, you can swear.
I was like, oh, fuck, I better start actually prepping. So I got like really deep into like sort of not too deep into the survivalist videos of conspiracy, but in terms of just, you know, how to store food, I bought and I ended up buying an air rifle and seeds.
Nice.
That was like one of my survival plans, was an air rifle. So I bought this air rifle online.
Such a good combination.
It's a start. Yeah, I know. It's a start.
I bought air rifle and seeds, and I've been like looking at bug out bag backpacks. But you know, there's sort of like, and there's sort of many ways how it could collapse. We could end up in, you know, obviously, you know, there could be environmental issues. There could be a sort of collapse of the financial system. Yeah. There could be, you know, so it's just in terms of like, say, like we're talking about Mad Max. So I think that's the funniest scenario. Yeah, yeah. It's like a Mad Max wasteland, no law.
Desertification, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of leather.
Scott's going back. Yeah. So dystopia, like, you know, desert.
Yeah,
kind of desertification of the land. Yeah, no, it's a good point because I feel like I've done the same. You know, I've had to kind of run through my survival kit. But it's very important, as you said, to make a distinction between what causes the apocalypse. Because, for example, at the moment, you can argue viral outbreak could cause the end of civilization. So in that case, you might need, I suppose, you may need some antiviral drugs or some kind of supplements that can boost it as well. I feel like there's essentials that go with your survival kit. So I'd say some form of water purification.
Yeah.
So if that involves like, maybe I just get like a whole bunch of like Brita filters.
Yeah.
So a bunch of Brita filters, like maybe like some activated charcoal. I believe I read in like a GQ article a couple of years ago that you can put a little bit of like bleach in your water to slightly chlorinate it and disinfect it.
Yeah.
So true, I'd use that as well. So then, I suppose, and then I just need like a, I probably need like a lighter, like a Zippo. So if I want to just further distill my water or light a fire, I'm bringing that along as well. So I bring it. But then I feel you can get like, I'm sure there's lights that work underwater and stuff. But if not, flares. I probably need flares. So I get some flares going.
Flares
sound good.
Yeah. It kind of makes me mad when I think about it, because America is most prepped because they sort of allowed guns and they're allowed sort of, you know, they have much more sort of land and shit. Where in England, we're kind of effed.
Yeah, we're so effed in England. Yeah, we don't have very few bunkers. All of our bunkers are like war bunkers and they're like tourist attractions. Yeah. So you get in there and it's like, why are there t-shirts and where are there originals here? It's a fucking apocalypse. So we're not particularly well prepped for it. But then Americans, I think they're obsessed with it, and I feel like people leave out that while Americans materialistically, I think there's definitely for survival, there's a real revenue stream in the industry there. I think just the normal disposition of most Americans means they would struggle, and that's only evidenced by the fact that while there are some American militias and kind of like, you know, doom cults where people are living by themselves and recycling their own urine, and that's working great for them. The fact that most Americans can't handle wearing a mask tells me they will kind of struggle. Now, whether you sit or you're pro or anti the whole mask thing, the fact that it's considered such an inconvenience and a physical shackle to so many people, I'm like, so if you have to try and escape a irradiated zone through a series of underground tunnels that might require some kind of hazmat equipment, if you're already like, a mask, that's hard. You probably aren't going to make it in the new dystopian world.
Yeah. I mean, I think as well is like, if they start saying, my rights, and you go, it's the end of the world. There's no more rights. Stop fucking saying about your constitution.
Exactly. God has forsaken us. Run. Are you blind?
Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? Because you definitely, I mean, I think the first thing for me, Jamali, is that I do not own any weapons other than the ones in my kitchen, which, you know,
are the best ones, Howard, because you don't have to reload the knife.
Yeah. So, good point. But I think I do have a friend I'm not going to name him just in case he has a problem with me sharing the fact that he has loads of weapons. But I am going to go to his house. I've told him that already. Particularly if it's a zombie apocalypse, that'll be the
Oh, a zombie, that'd be a good one, isn't it?
But I realised, to be honest with you, mate, that when I actually, you know, got involved in this whole, you know, the pandemic hit and you were like, okay, I've got to, you know, start thinking about other things. I'm fucked, basically. I am fucked. I am not the guy. The only thing I've got here that I have ordered as part of this kind of thing is I've got 6 bags of wholemeal organic risotto rice. That's like the most middle class kind of panic buy ever. So I'm fucked, man. Like I don't even think I'm going to make it out of the house. Like I'll probably injure myself on the way to the car to escape. Like it's just
twist your ankle or something.
Twist my ankle. Have to call the ambulance. Who are just like, will you fuck off? There's a fucking zombie apocalypse.
Howard, there's not going to be any reception, Howard. What you need is a CB radio.
Good point.
With a shortwave radio, so it can be like, I could be like, you know, Dane and Jamali to base. You can't rely on these kind of things, Howard. I feel like it sounds like the cannibals are probably going to eat you first.
Yeah, I'm done.
Unless, of course, you can whip up a very good risotto super quick.
You have like a sign in your house saying, we'll give refuge if you have a nice bottle of wine.
Exactly.
If anyone can bring chapata, you're welcome.
What's the vintage? As you look through the little flap of the door, what's the vintage?
The slider, hold it up to the door.
Hold up the door. Hold up the vintage.
That's
the
a cat.
Door.
That's a cat. Please. I'm Charles Mouse. That's all I had. Is that box wine? Please. We're Charles Mouse. My baby. I think it's scary how woefully unprepared people are. And, you know, it's evidence for me. I think it's just the way people's priorities have been able to change, especially because, like, do you remember, like, the first kind of riots we had here in, like, the 80s? Where people were writing for, like, you know, poll tax and, you know, their civil rights. And, you know, the second time we had riots, people were, like, stealing trainers and raiding JD Sports and stuff, which I feel like shows you how people's focus has shifted as they've become consumerists over the last decade or so. So I think most people are... I think if we live in a time, Jamali, where people need a watch to tell them how many steps they've taken, we are in trouble. If you need a phone to tell you to go walking... Or, you know, a lot of people can't even exercise unless you can see them doing it on Instagram. So, yeah. I think we're working unprepared. I've kind of gone through my essentials. I feel like I said, I think it's water filtration or water source. I probably need some antibiotics. And
you got to head out of the city as well. You got to head out of the city, right?
Antibiotics. Depends, Howard. You can be on the outskirts, maybe if you go into the city for supplies, like scrap metal or maybe.
You need to watch all of The Walking Dead, mate. I've watched all 10 series of The Walking Dead and it's not very good.
You've watched all 10 seasons and that didn't even let you know, maybe I should invest in an air rifle just in case. Yeah. Do you know what I want to do? You know what I might as well do as well? You know what I might definitely do as well, Jamali? Yeah. I'm going to be involved in fermenting fruits. So, like, if I find, like, discarded fruits and stuff, then I'm going to have a whole fermentation thing. So, basically, I'm going to set up, like, a brewery or a distillery. And that's how I make my money in the new world. I'll be trading my alcohol for, you know, pelts or water, moisturizers. And then I'll be like, I draw the line at people. Because, you know, some people be like, what about these kids today? And I'll be like, I draw the line at that shit. And then they...
I think one of my plans for the apocalypse is to go into business with Dane. Generally, I think Dane will be like a kingpin kind of character. Like, you know, he's like a bit like Red in The Shawshank Redemption. Yeah. You know, he's a man who knows how to get things.
Also,
like,
there'll be my stable of sex workers, which we use as bait for like the most corrupt souls in the new world. So I'll be like, you like Buttercup here? She just turned 17, and the guy's like, ooh, I like that. So then they go back, and then we rub them strip. And Buttercup's got this big zombie killer knife. She's like, take it off, mister! And then, you know...
Booker Eli vibe.
Just like that.
But you bring up a good point, though. It's that weird thing, and I know it's kind of like cliche, but you do realise that in these times, like, you lack the basic skills that aren't the system. Like, you know, like, people can't fish, they can't hunt, they don't know how to... build a fire. They don't know that all of these sort of basic things that were the essentials of, you know, living and surviving are sort of just dead and gone. Like, nobody knows and it's just the minimum basics, like setting a fire and
navigating
feeding yourself.
Navigating the compass as well.
Reading a fucking map. I can't read a map.
Jamali, do you think you'll be any good in an apocalypse, Jamali, or will you?
I want to. I want to think instincts would kick in, but I've been in situations where I'm I'll tell you this story. I was in LA, right? I've gone downtown LA and I've left my phone in the Uber in downtown LA and it's drove off. And there was no like instinct. There was no like, oh shit, like let me learn how to ride a bus. Or literally, I just literally looked at the sky and it went, I live here now. That was my whole thing. I live here now. Man. There was no, but you know what I'm saying? There's no
survival. It's like being thrown out of a hospital and you're like, where the fuck am I? And you're like, it's the wind just blowing in your butt. And like, you know, 28 days later when the dude wakes up in the hospital and he's like, because that's how I lost, my phone just went on the fritz when I was in New York and they were like, you'd have to go to the Apple Store and try and restore it, and I'm like, how?
Yeah. And that's not even real. That's still using the system, and it's just like I like to think I would survive. Like I like to think that I have some, either instinct. I think all men kind of, or all people kind of, like to think that when push comes to shove, they would kind of live longer than they would. But I honestly don't know. I've never been put, and it's weird that like in that situation, the most prepared guy would be Bear Grylls, but it's the guy you would least want to be with.
That's the thing.
But you know what? I actually think there's quite an interesting element to here, which is just knowing you both pretty well. Like, I don't think you'll be very high maintenance. That's the thing. I think you'll develop a system quite quickly of how to cope with it, and you'll just get on with it. You won't be. There's a lot of people who are going to be really, you know. You look at how people are acting about the masks, right? Yeah. Like they're so high maintenance that they can't deal with it.
It's that whole survival thing. As my mum always says, as long as she has flour, water, and salt, she'll never starve. So yeah, I think those could be the essentials as well. Because also you could pass off the flour as cocaine and do drug deals.
But they're kind of built from a different cloth, though. Especially like, you know, I mean, is your mum?
Yeah, she's first generation. Yeah, so she came in the 60s.
But like, you know, even just the idea of, you know, killing a chicken to cook it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? But just that basic idea is like to our sort of family that came from back home, that's not a mental idea. But if you go to majority of people in this country and go like, bruv, you're going to have to kill that cow to eat it, it would be such a foreign idea.
The idea that it's like, well, I just want to have nuggets. Well, you're going to have to kill another 7 of these chickens. Yeah. Because that's where nuggets come from. So,
yeah. And I think it's like, you know, in terms of like adapting, I think that the human mind has a way of adjusting to adverse situations. It's sort of like, you ever hear about them stories of them guys who go prison in Bangkok, which is the most horrific fucking situation and the most horrific conditions, but they just adapt. You know what I'm saying, though? Like, your mind just has a way where I think if you're a certain build of person, and I'm not saying I'm that build of person, I don't know. I've never been.
I think
that
class has something to do with it, mate. I think class will often have a role to play there, because yeah, I think some of us just can adapt.
I think, Howard, in terms of class, I think all class dictates is how many leagues you have to be relegated to before you can return to that savage mode. So does that make sense, Jamal? Like, if you're not at 1%, you probably have to come be relegated and drop a few points before you get back into, like, you know, drinking tap water. And then you have to drop a few more points before, you know, you start having to kill and hunt your own meat. And then there's a few more points where you're just back to basically loincloths and face paint.
Yeah, there's going to be guys that who were in the 1% running around the apocalypse still wearing a suit. Like, I don't know what you want. And you go, no,
he's like, please, like, I'll give you stocks and bonds in this briefcase. Please, what do you want? I had a yacht. I can make you a very rich man. Just listen. And if people are like, rich man, I just want to eat your tongue. Yeah. Why? Why did he eat my tongue? You seem like a smart man.
I think if you live past the first 10 years, I think communities will start building.
Yeah.
You know, I think after, like, there will be a time where people start building little towns and communities and trade would happen again. But I think you just got to get over that initial people looting, rioting, going crazy, murdering. Yeah, do you know what I'm saying?
The violence. And just the crazy sorrow of some people, like Howard, just giving up.
Just hiding in the corner.
Come and find Howard. Howard, I've come to rescue you. And it's just a bowl of couscous mixed with sleeping pills. Howard, no!
Oh my God. Howard, that's fucking funny.
Yeah,
man.
It's well, hopefully we really helped our listeners.
Essential tools for survival.
If it happens. And it was a brilliant brilliant question, Dane. It's we love that question. I love the hypotheticals, right, Dane? We
don't exactly, get yeah, more hypotheticals than that for listeners, but yeah, that was a great question, yeah. Jamali.
nice one, Jamali. Really good.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I was going to change the tone, which is often the way this podcast works, right? Apologies if this isn't as hilarious as the last question, but that's how we roll, right, Dane?
Absolutely.
That's how we do our
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. Question every, it's like everything.
So I had a feeling on Sunday, actually, because me and Dane, as listeners will find out, we did a lovely live podcast recording for the London Podcast Festival, which was just amazing, right, Dane? It was such a brilliant, even in this pandemic era.
Yeah, no, it was really good, and good crowd, and thanks again to everybody who came out and supported live in the flesh, and also a massive shout out to Jess Foster Q and Dan Schreiber as well, that were so gracious to come and join us on the pod.
So you guys can look forward to seeing that, you know, listening to that, and then I was really happy afterwards. A friend of mine was there. I had a beer with a friend after the, like, imagine that. I couldn't believe that I was drinking a beer. And then I had to go and walk to get my car, and I had a Five Guys burger. And I, wow. At that point, Dane, and Jamali, I thought I was winning at life. Just like perfect moment of winning at life. And I wanted to ask you both, because I massively respect you both for your work and your what you guys represent in our industry. And you know, just culturally as well, how you kind of do your thing. How often do you guys feel that you are winning at life?
Good question.
Good question, man. That's a really good question.
Because I'm going to just quickly just precursor with one thing, which is to say, never for me. Never for me. And it was just Sunday, because it was like, it's a little buzz. You know, you get off stage. You know, you had fun. Quick beer. Five Guys burger. I'm in the car listening to music. Perfect, right? It just doesn't happen that often.
I feel like in terms of winning at life, I think I'm quite a person. I think it's quite common with comics as well. Is, you know, to make you do comedy, you kind of might have had some issues with, say, you know, feelings about yourself to why you need to go on stage to get laughing from people, right? So I'm very self-critical. So, you know, my sort of how I feel I'm winning in life comes in very like sections, but I don't think there's an overall arc, because I think especially when you're in showbiz, there's always that next thing. And I think as well as you can kind of get caught up, and I've faced it myself. And I think since the pandemic, really, I've kind of appreciated more what I have. You know, because I know there's a lot of other people who have it worse than me, not even just in comedy, but, you know, just in life. So it kind of made me appreciate. So I go, actually, you know, my life's okay. I am kind of winning in the game of life. You know, I get to, like, you know, wake up when I want on a Monday.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Pretty good. You know, I'm saying, like, that's not a bad fucking life, you know. But yeah, and it's just, you know, and I try to, you know, keep away from it. But it happens to all the best of us. Is, I think in this game especially, people tell you what you want. And so it kind of makes you not appreciate what you have. You know what I mean? Because they're like, you could get a TV show and they're like, yeah, but you know, you should maybe try and get a Netflix special. Yeah, in your head, you're like, I need a Netflix special. Where before, I would never give a shit about that type of stuff. So in terms of, do I feel like I'm winning in life? Sometimes, but I think, you know, it comes.
I think you've put it really well, Jamali. And I think, you know, it is, for me, in terms of happiness, I'd say, like, so historically, happiness is very similar to, like, you know, the whole comedian aesthetic, where it's like everyone in the room can be laughing, but when you're a comedian, it's the one person that's not laughing that you focus on. And I think sometimes historically, as a comedian and as a person, that can kind of be the thing that is impedes my happiness, in that, like, no, my life can be going well and stuff like that, but sometimes, and I guess it might be more of an empathetic thing or an artist thing, it's very hard to enjoy all of it if you can see people close to you or directly linked to you having a hard time. So for me, for example, it can be like, yeah, my comparative privilege that's been afforded by my status as a performer, as an artist, and, you know, what it can potentially earn in this industry. But then you might look at the iniquity that other, you know, members of the Black community, or the what's referred to as the BAME community, the iniquity that they're suffering. It's hard to be fully happy, kind of thing. So I suppose it's like, I'm happy that I'm eating. And I mean that in the figurative sense, but it's very hard for you to enjoy a meal with everyone else on the table starving. But I think what people say is happiness, is it reality minus expectation?
I was literally about to do the phrase that I do, I reckon, about every six episodes.
I think that really resonated very well with me, because like Jamali said, it's happiness is such a subjective idea that, you know, sometimes people will try and homogenize that idea and tell you what should be in your life to make you happy. And I was just thinking, like, you have to remember, like, 10 years ago, I was happy if someone said to buy me a drink.
Bro, I'll be real with you. When I started, and I know it's sort of like, it sort of sounds like, to maybe to the listeners, that our happiness only comes from our success in comedy, but it's one of the things of it really literally just becomes your life. You know what I'm saying? Like, so all of my life is this thing, you know what I mean? I don't really, my social life is talking to other comics, you know what I mean? Like, so it, you know, so sorry if it does sound a little bit too abstract for people, but it's like, it's kind of one of them things of, when I started comedy, my only dream was to play Amsterdam.
Of course, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying, though? That was it. That's the only thing I ever wanted to do, and you know, and it's, and so, you know, so when I look at the things you achieve and stuff, cause I remember I was talking to my uncle once, and my uncle's just like normal dude, fucking mechanic, and came to one of my shows, and we're talking about comedy, and he was like, oh, so where you been? And I was telling him the countries I've been to and the things I've done. And he says to me, it's good because, you know, no one can ever take that from you. Like, no matter what happens, it's more if they say, Jamali, no more comedy. I've done all those things and I've lived that life, you know? So you kind of got to hold on to those things, I think, especially in these times where everything's so uncertain. The only thing we have is our achievements and our...
Like everyone, you're in somewhat of an industrial bubble. So when we talk about, like, oh, I had to get up early and get the flight to go and do the show in Estonia, then the next day we're going to Finland, and we're talking about it quite matter-of-factly, when it's like, you're being flown to a country you've never been before, for people that have never seen you before in real life, to sit down and watch you perform comedy and laugh, and it's like, that is insane. But I feel like, you know what, I think it's required the stillness of lockdown for be able to kind of observe that, because, as I said, because happiness a lot of time, or what should make you happy, is suggested to you. I think for a long time, like you said, we'll achieve, but we're told that you know, it should be seen as a given that you're supposed to achieve more, that ambition is supposed to be a natural part of your complex as an artist within this industry, and, you know, ascension to what echelons of, you know, achievement you can have, that's supposed to be a given, like whether it's winning an award or winning a BAFTA or an RTA, and then what's next. But it's like, you know, I think for me, still remembering, like, getting paid to do something you like doing. And
that's the be all and end all of what we get, you know, we're lucky to do, right? And I kind of often think about this, and how you know, if I've got a friend who I love dearly, he drives you know, a cab, and you know, that's a perfectly legitimate life and business, and looks after his family, and occasionally he'll tell me a funny story, or he had someone famous in the car, and you know, that's it, really. There's, you know, sometimes it was good today, sometimes it wasn't as good, that's it, right? You know, and I often look at that and other people in that world where their lives are not gonna potentially roll, I kind of almost phrase it like, are they going to roll the six or roll the, you know, are they going to have the major high? Often there's major lows in any job or any life, unfortunately, but the major highs that, like, I mean, I don't know, like Jamali, the first time you made a doc, or, you know, when you smashed Apollo for the first time, like those highs are something that most people will just never get. And therefore that at those moments, I don't know what you guys did after you had those first major milestones. Did you go and get your, I think the Five Guys burger was the reason I really felt happy on Sunday.
You might have just been hopped off on MSG, you know?
I, to be honest with you, we're getting older now. So, like, we can't just eat Five Guys whenever we want. So it's kind of like a high point in our day. Yeah, I'm like, no, I just had like Five Guys.
We can't eat that shit. It was professional, it was the professional feeling of the podcast mixed with this kind of like
the adrenaline, the dopamine from achieving something, and also that's a tasty burger. There's probably
steroids
in that making you be like, yeah, take on the world.
And so I kind of think that there's an interesting comparison to just make when you look at the kind of world outside of our thing, which is how often do people who don't get to experience those highs feel that they're winning at life? And if I, not that we can answer that, but I almost feel like if civilization can answer that, we might dispense with some of the nonsense that we distract ourselves with, because, like, everyone should feel that they're winning at life.
But you know what? It's that weird thing as well. I think a lot of it's to do with, and I know this quite sounds, because I'm, you know, London-centric, but it's harder to be happy in London because it's just everything is faster, it's more lonely, it's more expensive. Like, people that I know that live in a smaller city, like a Manchester, a Birmingham, a Leeds, you know, and even if they just have a normal gig, they are generally more happier people. And I think as well is like when you're living in London and you're living the fast paced thing, you kind of lose sight of what is important.
Jamali, you know, mate, like we grew up in the same neighborhood, you know, me and Jamali in Ilford. And, you know, I spent my whole life in London. And a couple of years ago, I got married and moved to Hertfordshire, which is, you know, 25 minutes from London. I've never been more chilled in my approach to the world than where I live now. Like, it has completely altered. I was so much angrier. I was so much more ready to. Sometimes I woke up this morning and my baby slept till like 7. So I've got nothing to get pissed off about there. And I was just annoyed for some reason. I was trying to work out why I was annoyed. And I was just like, well, it's just because that's what I've been used to most of my life. It's just getting ready to be angry to face the world, right? It's like, that isn't what life's about, is it?
And I think, you know, I think a lot of people is just like, you know, as long as their bills are paid, they can go on a decent holiday and buy a steak dinner now and again. I think, you know, that's a good life, man. And I think as well is that you can't get wrapped up in this sort of capitalistic and, you know, like, not everyone can fucking be a rapper, man. Like, me and Dane and you are blessed to have a job like this. But you know what, man? It's not the most important thing in the world. It's really not. Like, and we've been there. Like, being on TV is fine.
it really isn't. No one stays famous as well. A lot of the images we see of that's of happiness are linked to capital gain and stuff as well.
Oh man, that must be why I feel like I'm winning at life, I guess, a lot, Dane, because I don't give a fuck
about that's the extension of the question I was going to ask Howard, is that if, because obviously that is part of a binary paradigm of competition, winning and losing. So if you're winning in life, which is a state that some people should, everyone should try to enjoy. So who's losing? I think that's the issue, because which is what I was saying before, is that, like, if I'm winning in life, it's nice to think I'm winning in life, but if I'm winning, am I winning at the expense of another human being losing? And are there dependent or independent variables that dictate this? If I don't get a gig or a job, but someone I like gets it, then shouldn't I be happy that they get to enjoy, you know, an experience and they can actually use that to kind of remunerate their family or take care of themselves? Yeah. Or am I pissed because I've lost out on the opportunity to increase my profile and my wealth? So,
100%. But it's a tough one, man, because, you know, you're only playing yourself in this game, isn't it?
Exactly.
And you know, you're trying to get as many points as you can, but it's trying to also not be a cunt while you're doing it.
Well, this is it, yeah. And I think that's the thing, is that happiness, I guess the way I try and remedy that is that, I guess, to try and ponder my, I try not to ponder my own individual happiness, because obviously as a human being, I'm part of a social species. So I guess I feel like if I eat, everyone around me should eat, right? So
yeah,
as I said, I find it's a lot easier for me to experience happiness when people around me aren't experiencing hardships. Yeah, man, but I do feel that sometimes I'm winning at life. But
I think you're both winning. I think all three of us are winning pretty
In the whole, I do. I just think I'm sort of thinking more about it because of the sort of question I want to give an honest answer. But I think in terms of life, you know what, man? I think of how bad it could have been.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I look at people around me that I grew up with and who are, you know, exactly, they're just as funny as I am, but they just never pursued it. And, you know, how sort of situations my friends are in and that. And, you know, I think I'm winning. I think, you know.
I'll tell you another way that I'm winning. I bought a heated clothes horse.
Oh, that's winning. That is.
Tell
winning,
you, lads, that heated clothes horse, it's like putting on hot butter.
Yeah, I've got one and I just broke it the other day.
Oh, no.
What I'm saying is, are we not going to return to washing lines where we have to leave our clothes at the mercy of Mother Nature? And if Mother Nature dictates that we're going to have damp clothing in this new apocalypse, maybe that's the way things have to go, Howard. You need to get a solar-powered clothesline. Oh, yeah. Those already exist. It's called hanging out your washing outside.
Well, we got to the bottom of two questions there, and I think we're all winning. And I definitely think, you know, the way audiences and your fans respond to both of you, you guys are... given a lot to the world, so that's what matters in a lot of ways, right? Is that people want to hear what you're doing.
And also people can listen to what you've created, and hopefully they can feel like they're winning too.
Well, we hope all our listeners are winning today when they're listening to this show. Hey, Dane, it's over to you for the final question of today's show.
Absolutely. And so I like to say, without being too presumptuous, I've noticed that Jamali, you're somewhat of an anthropologist. You like to study people.
I do. I like the sort of weird and wonderful world.
Yeah. And you seem to have a very healthy fascination with the various tribes of this here planet Earth. Evidenced by a very, very good documentary, Hate Thy Neighbor. And if people haven't seen it, I very much encourage you to watch it. I think the last 4 years for most people have been very revelatory. And I think there are some people, as crazy it will sound to you and I, Jamali, and yourself, Howard, I don't think some people understood how deep the hatred runs in the West. Whereas yourself, you were many years ahead of the curve and documented all of this stuff. So when before these flames were as high as they were and they were just embers, you kind of had boots on the ground, Jamali. So I say all that to say this, yeah. Do you think, based on the people you've spoken to, hatred can win?
Oh, that's a good question, man.
I don't think people understand how deep it is that, you know, especially in America, people's entire identity is rooted within their idea of supremacy and privilege.
Do you know what? That's such a good way to put it, is that their identity is so much of that. And without that, they literally have nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like, literally, without having that identity of superiority, or without even just having a something, you know, they have nothing. And, you know, to answer the question, and I don't think it's an easy question to answer, can they win? Of course it can win. You know what I'm saying? Of course, that ideology can win. Do I think it will win? I hope not. You know, I've sort of become less and less sort of optimistic and sort of kumbayarism as the years have gone on. You know what I'm saying? I think, you know, the idea of saying, can it win? It can, you know, it can completely take over, you know, and I think there's sort of like a really strange sort of battle happening right now, where everybody, or not everybody, but there's so many people polarized in their ideas. And so right now we have this weird war going on between extremes. And what's happening is we're all getting sucked up into the extremes. And I think until we kind of have our thing where, like, no, I'm left wing, but I'm not them guys. Or no, I'm kind of right wing, you know, economically conservative, but I'm not them fucking crazy guys. As long as we keep on getting sucked up into a side that isn't actually our side,
yeah,
I think, and then we're fucked. Do you know what I'm saying?
Because I just feel like, the hatred thing is that, like, we've gotten to a point, where it's almost, it's defying logic. I feel like, for example, you know, we are how many years deep into Brexit negotiations, and I feel like we still failed to realise, and whether you voted for or remain, that a large part of the decision which has led to this was fueled by xenophobia. And, you know, hatred towards immigrants and asylum seekers. And I think that kind of was the thought process that kind of has overshadowed any other potentially benevolent reasons for leaving the European Union. But it looks like at this point now, it's very clear
as it was to a lot of people that we may vote to remain, that without the information, we were definitely voting against our own self-interest. But some people just don't really want to acknowledge it. I'm not sure.
Well, it became this weird protest.
About
you know what I'm saying? And it's like something that should be bipartisan. I listened to you when you were talking to Adam Rowe and you were talking about the COVID thing, how it should be a bipartisan thing. It's about health and safety. It's a fucking pandemic, but it becomes a sort of like identity. And it's like, if you was a Remainer, it came with a whole bunch of ideologies that had nothing to do with staying in the EU. And if you voted Leave, it became with a whole bunch of ideologies that had nothing to do with leaving the EU. It just became sort of like a protest or a sort of like a signifier to what you believe on the whole, when it kind of wasn't nothing to do with that. It's about trade.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And it's,
trade deals have nothing to do with if you think there should be gender neutral toilets.
They're not linked in the slightest. And it's so interesting you say that because it's like, it's so funny that it's the one aspect, because it's the whole thing about the Brexit thing is kind of like going back on the Maastricht Treaty, but the whole thing is economically based. It's based on trade and basically movement within Europe. And these are all, they're all dealing with issues of a commercial nature. So how it became one about, you know, how we've been able to kind of make a conversation about integrity and making a conversation about, like, you know, people's disposition in terms of how they see other people outside of their own countries. It's a, like you said, how are we talking about trade and we got onto like gender neutral toilets? Like, it is absolutely insane.
Yeah,
but I think that was kind of a suggestion as well, wasn't it? Like, when people, they like the Daily Mail and like other publications would be like, this guy is using the EU law for his human rights, for human rights, so they can't get him off this roof. And our trains are delayed. People are like, because I think, and obviously it's axiomatic, people can be like, well, if that's what they're doing, we should get rid of our human rights. And they're going to come out.
It's such a strange thing where we're voting against human rights. But you see, like when I started making Hate Thy Neighbor, it was such a strange thing because I remember the first episode we did was Sweden, and they were telling us they were alt-right, and we didn't know what that meant. Because it was like Trump was still a laughable candidate, you know, and there wasn't, you know, there was sort of like, you know, murmurs of the rise of the right, but it was kind of stuck to 4chan forum pages. It wasn't really, you know, on the streets as much as it is now. But, it, you know, in the last, you know, that I made that 5 years ago, it's so dramatic now. And I like to think it's generational. I like to think that, you know, my little sister's generation will be different.
It definitely has peaks and troughs, right? It has rises and falls, obviously.
Yeah, I don't think we can sustain that though. I think there needs to be big drastic changes, or we can't sustain having fucking swings and roundabouts. I think we're coming to the end of three steps forward, two steps back. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think we can carry on like this.
I think you're making incredible points, and I think my approach to this, and it's kind of the last kind of, in 2020 I've been working on my normal stuff in comedy, but also working on some documentary stuff that I've told Dane about, that's kind of quite heavy and kind of makes you kind of try and analyze things slightly differently, because you realize that you obviously are bringing a perspective to a subject. There's no way you can't, right? It's just impossible. I've deliberately in the last few months tried to kind of really pull myself out of that and try and understand, you know, just using, you know, America as an example, you know, you can use many countries as examples, that why is this happening? You know, that's one of the things that people don't really want to face up to. And you know, personally, you know, I'm a Jew, grew up with plenty of anti-Semitism, and, you know, will always be anti-racist and anti-prejudice. That's just the basis of who I am. I didn't ever think that I would end up being as anti whatever the fuck this is on the left that I'm hearing, where people are literally condemning people off the back of, like, they're much more happy to just throw you away and never have stomp their feet and never play with you again than engage you in a conversation, which I think is one of the most dangerous things we've ever seen. And to me, it all centers around this one point, and then I'll hand it back to you guys, which is on the right wing, you are able to get across a very clear message that can be summed up so simply in a slogan, a phrase, not to say that's healthy, by the way, that they can sum it up so simply, but they can get their message across to you so clearly that they're just pulling people in. No matter who you are, they can pull you in. Old people, young people, people of all sorts of demographics. On the left, right now, You stand for fucking nothing. Keir Starmer, I don't know what the fuck that guy is. You know, unfortunately, Joe Biden, I'm sure he's a lovely bloke. I bet he's a really pleasant human being in many
ways. He's establishment.
But he is not standing for fuck all in anything, really. I don't know what he is at the moment. And on that basis, the left are going to keep losing until they rebrand and rethink what they want to stand for.
I think it's as well as what we got to understand. I think what the left have to do is figure out what the fuck the left is now. Do you know what I'm saying? Because I think the problem is when we say left, it means so much different things. And it's kind of the same with the right too, because I'm not, you know, like, I don't agree with conservative ideas. Like, personally, it's just not my thing. You know, maybe I'm a London liberal, whatever the fuck, you know, but it just doesn't, you know, I don't really agree with it. But there's some people that are conservatives that I don't hate, and I don't think they're racist. I think they're just a little bit, you know, financially conservative, and that's fine. But it's like, the problem is we've got these extreme elements on both sides that have become mainstream ideas.
And some of them some of them are, because a lot of this discourse takes place on the internet, some of these are actually just, I mean, you could argue manifestations of the extremes of these ideologies. So almost people exhibiting the ideology by definition, because you can do that on the internet and you can almost have an embellished version of these things. Whereas I think most people, as you said, Jamali, correctly, have a much more of a duality. Like, for example, as a, you know, the son of Caribbean immigrants, I know for a fact that obviously people would argue by disposition, you are automatically on the left because you are a non-white Anglo-Saxon person living in the UK. But then by the same token, you know, a lot of the ideas and the ideals in terms of my upbringing will have their root in Christian conservatism. And that could be the same for a lot of my peers and stuff as well. And it's not that, you know, I share the sentiment of the Republican Party in terms of like restricting, like, you know, transgender people joining the military or gay marriage. I don't have those issues. But at the same time, I recognize the importance of, and I would never oppose, you know, the idea of like, you know, my mom going to church on a Sunday or going to midnight mass on Christmas Eve. So I think what's happened is, like you said, is that people have been able to weaponize hatred. And, you know, through some, I guess, through straw man tactics and through manipulation, they've been able to push people a lot on the fringes of the bipartisan political spectrum more than they'd ever been. Because I've always tried to argue with people, like, for example, when we talk about left and right, like I said, our understanding of them is that, for me, I've never seen pure capitalism in existence, and I've never seen pure communism in existence. I say that because you could argue that North Korea is one of the most communist countries in the world, if not the most communist country. But Kim Jong-un inherited his position as supreme leader from Kim Jong-il. So there was no democracy involved. And also that's dynastic. So that's more of a country being run like a monarchy. So that's more feudal than it was communist. And then, you know, you have the banker bailout in 2008, which I would argue sparked all of this online division and all this distraction. That comes from, you know, the epitome of capitalist institutions, a bank, relying on taxpayer money, which is socialist, to bail itself out of trouble because it was in too big to fail, which is a concept that doesn't economically work within a free market. So I just think the hatred has kind of been stoked to the point. I mean, it's to the point of impossible levels because, you know, like I said, for me, white supremacy, you could look at it biologically. For you to continue this when you are already a global minority, there's nothing short of incest is the only way you're going to be able to continue the aesthetic and the ideology which you regard as white, unless you are actually making people in a laboratory, which could be the way we're going. Also, that being said, is that, like, in order for, you know, any free market to continue to prosper, you need to be involved in international trade or immigration, one of the two. So being an isolated nation that doesn't participate in global trade, especially when you're one which consumes a third of the planet's resources, like the United States, then having this jingoistic hatred towards other nations, how long is that going to run for? You know, so you've got it's just madness. So which is why I'm, but at the same time, I think because these fires of hatred have been stoked so much, and they provide so much privilege for people, because especially because of the fact that people can revel in their hatred through these new echo chambers and stuff that have come along through social networking. I'm just like, I just don't know how much longer it can continue on both sides, because that shit must be exhausting as well to be hating all the time. And I just feel like, it can't be a coincidence that some of the countries most known for their prolific white supremacy, United Kingdom, United States, and, you know, like Brazil, are also the countries where people are received the most psychiatric treatment, the most cosmetic surgery, highest incidence of opioid addiction. So
who is winning here? Can hatred? I mean, ideologically, maybe hatred can win, but can it win in terms of practically? Can the theory work as its practice work out? Because, you know, the Proud Boys, for example, they also like to drink a few beers, and it's real hard for you to maintain a war of attrition if you're drunk all the time. So,
I mean, but it's like, you know, it can't, you know, and it's sort of this weird thing now what's happened, and it's like, you know, because I'm gonna be honest with you. It's like, I think that, you know, when it, especially with the white supremacy system we have now, or sort of like the system we have now that privileges a few but not everyone, but they allow a couple people in, right? So you might have a sports star, you might have an athlete who's a millionaire, and that's sort of seen as a privilege. It's an uncomfortable point to me to admit, but when I would go to these Trump rallies, there'll be more brown and black faces than you would want to expect there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's because, you know, some people benefit off the system that aren't white, but it's like they, you know, and it's sort of like a fuck you, I'm okay mentality. You know what I'm saying? So we got to deal with that. You know, that's a whole nother element to the fucking argument that we got to deal with now, is these sort of people that do benefit off it, or do have a sort of nice life living amongst that system, or want to see that system prevail, even though they're not the people who...
It appears to be in their own, against their own self-interest. But, you know, that paradigm's always existed, in that you've always had a proletariat that's manipulated by the powers that be, and they will enlist the bourgeoisie to either control or distract, you know, the proletariat. Mm. So, like, you do have kind of sometimes what may be referred to as a black boulet, or the talented tenth, as Dubois kind of referred to them, where a lot of times, like you said, it's the whole thing about happiness, whereby people are like, oh, yeah, I did all right, so I'm making my life happy, so you should be able to be doing it in the same pursuit of happiness you have yourself. And, yeah, it's worrying, man. But I always feel like that mentality is quite easy, where people feel like, if the person that hates me and my bully, if I sidle up to him, he'll bully everybody else and leave me alone for a bit longer. And I think that's just the mentality, man, really. So even that, I don't think that duality, I don't think that can survive for that long.
Well, I'm sure I speak for most of our listeners when I say that we hope it doesn't win, Dane, and do your bit to try and stop it.
I would say, you know, it's like, what did Martin Luther King say? Can't defeat light with darkness, but you can defeat darkness with light, in that if you bring a candle into a dark room, that room will be illuminated.
Mm.
But if there's a candle or light in a room, darkness can't come and take it. So, yeah. Just that one person doing something different, Howard, that one person not laughing in the crowd, that one person not doing that Nazi salute. It takes one person.
Mm. It's been it's flown by.
Absolutely, episode, yeah.
Right, Dane? An hour we hope our listeners loved.
Absolutely. It's been Jamali, brilliant. Thank you so much for coming to the pod, because, yeah, that did fly by.
No, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it, man.
And for those who are not aware of Jamali's work, Jamali does a very good job of continuing this conversation with his show on Vice Land, which is Hate Thy Neighbour. So please do check it out if you haven't. Jamali, where else can our listeners find your good works, please?
I am on, obviously, Instagram, Jamali Maddox. I'm on Twitter, Jamali Maddox, Facebook, Jamali Maddox. With the whole COVID thing, I don't really know about touring right now. I should be doing a show in London. I should be doing like a... some theatre show with socially distanced in London coming up soon. So if you want to come catch me, talk some crud shit, then fucking
that's
come
it.
Down, man.
Crud life forever, guys. this leads me to say thanks again to the honorary member of the Wu-Tang working in the UK, Jamali Maddox. Thank you very much. Stay being a hype beast. If you don't know Jamali, just check out his page, guys. Like, this guy is like a walking hip-hop account. And he thought...
I knew you was going to come with
no,
that.
No, people need to know...
Let me tell you, Dane is quite bad pattern, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. And those of you who are non-binary as well, yeah? If you want to just look at the equivalent of like a Tumblr for the best dressed comedian, check out Jamali's exclusive stuff. Yeah. maybe he's got a Depop, because he maybe get you something on the resale as well. So.
Nah, Mo comedian took over, man. I'm telling you.
You have to get Mo on the podcast. Now, Mo's been on the podcast, yeah. So, yeah, for those of you who check out that episode with Mo. But yeah, please do check out Jamali's stuff. In the meantime, Jamali, thanks again, brother. I will see you soon. Never let hate win, and I'll catch you on the other side. But yeah, have a wonderful day, sir.
All right, bye bye.
You've been listening to Dane Baptiste Questions Everything, hosted by Dane Baptiste. For more from Dane, go to danebaptiste.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at DaneBapTweets or Instagram at DaneSnapTeast. Our guest was Jamali Maddox. You can follow Jamali on Twitter and Instagram at Jamali Maddox. The show is produced by me, Howard Cohen. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheHowardCohen.
The show is mixed and mastered by Decode. You can follow D on Twitter and Instagram at @OfficialDecode. Please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @DBQEPodcast. Thanks to Polly, Gelly and the Acast team for all their support. Thanks for listening, guys. And remember, question everything.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.